I'm Mary Engish, and our gardening expert, Charlie Nardozzi, is present and accounted for. Hi, Charlie.
Yes, present and accounted for, Mary.
Charlie, these types of berries that you're going to talk about, you learned that some of these might be banned in our neighboring states. Tell us more about currants and gooseberries.
Yes, currants and gooseberries are ripening now, and they're great fruits to grow in a landscape. You only need one shrub, one bush. The bushes stay maybe 3-4 feet tall and wide. Maybe if you prune them every couple years or so just to take out the old growth, they just keep producing year after year, and they produce an abundance of all these berries that you can make juices with and jams and jellies and all kinds of different things. So we grow a selection of them here in Vermont, and it is fine to grow all of them in Vermont. They do suggest, of course, to grow disease-resistant black currant varieties if you can, and I'll talk about the reason for that in a minute. But some of the varieties that we grow for fresh eating are the white or the pink currants, and the pink currants, pink champagne, is a favorite one because you just go out there and you can just tickle the little berries that are growing in trusses into your hand and then just pop them into your mouth, and it's just an explosion of tart and sweetness. Oh my God, so good. I have to go. we grow red Hinamaki gooseberry, which is another nice one to grow. We even grow one called a yastaberry, which is a cross between a black currant and a gooseberry. And that's another one that has a little more of a sweetness. So the black currants and the red currants, though, are probably better for juice making. Of course, with the black currants, cassis is made, the liqueur cassis is made from that juice. But there is a concern, depending upon our neighboring states, about the laws regarding currants, because currants and gooseberries are the alternate host for the white pine blister rust, which is a disease of white pine trees. And you need to have both currant and gooseberry and white pine to get the disease to actually happen. So back in the early 20th century, it was banned to grow any currants and gooseberries. That ban was lifted in 1966, but states still have relative bans depending upon the state and depending upon the area within the state. So like I said, Vermont is fine. New York is actually pretty easy to grow them. They don't have a lot of restrictions any longer there. But if you go to New Hampshire and Massachusetts, for example, you either need a permit to grow them, or they'll be restricted by county in Massachusetts. So if you're listening to the show in any of those other places, you might want to check with your Department of Agriculture to see if you can actually legally grow currants and gooseberries in your state. But if you can, definitely give them a try. They're a great landscape plant to have, and they're really tasty.
Wow, fascinating. That's so wild. Here's a question coming in from Janice and Brian in Salisbury. And they write, we're interested in learning uses for knotweed and harvesting it. We have an abundance of it on our hillside along the Lester River in Salisbury.
Yes, well, Janice and Brian, you'll make a lot of friends if you ask to go harvest their Japanese knotweed, because it is a big invasive problem in all along the state, along waterways, in ditches along the roads, and any place where it's wet, it grows and thrives, as you know. But it is an edible plant. And in Japan, it's actually a culinary delight to have a Japanese knotweed. The way to eat it would be in the spring when it first comes up, you want to just snap off the shoots. As long as you can snap them off easily, that means they're tender enough to eat. And then you would use it like you would use rhubarb. And it has oxalic acid, so it has that kind of a sour flavor to it. You can peel the stems or leave them as they are, chop them up, make rhubarb pies out of them, or knotweed pies, shall we call them. You can chop up the leaves too. The leaves are edible, and put those in salads to add a little sourness to them as well. So there are different uses for them, culinary uses you can try either raw or cooked to use those knotweeds and make lots of friends in the process.
The next question comes in from Wendy in Guilford. Wendy writes, I've grown organic vegetables in the same spot for close to 50 years. The soil is rich, but this year I noticed huge numbers of worms. Every time I'd stick an implement in the ground, I'd get worms. They're suspecting that these are jumping worms. Left alone, will the moles that are on their property control those worms?
Well, it is correct, Wendy, that the moles will eat earthworms and the Asian jumping worms. So if you start seeing more mole activity, that's probably a good sign if you're concerned about the Asian jumping worms. Of course, the mole activity in and of itself can make a mess of a lawn or a garden and create tunnels for mice and voles and other critters to go down and eat your plants. The moles themselves don't eat the plants. They eat the earthworms and other things in the soil. So it is correct that you have moles there eating Asian jumping worms. It's just a matter of which one do you want to favor.
Send your gardening questions to Charlie, gardening@vermontpublic.org, and listen to the show in your favorite podcast feed. Thanks, Charlie.
You're welcome, Mary, and I'll be seeing you in the garden.